Jewel by Chef Steps is a proud sponsor of Beer Sessions Radio. Jewel Sous Vide is the future of the kitchen. Jewel, perfect food every time. Learn more at chefsteps.com/joule.
Monday, December 3rd is our annual gala, Winter in the Garden, and you are invited. Celebrate the season with Heritage Radio Network at the beautiful Palm House and Yellow Magnolia Cafe at Brooklyn Botanic Garden. It's the one night of the year where you can show your support for HRN while sipping on champagne, hanging out with our hosts, and bidding on one-of-a-kind silent auction items. VIP hour goes from 6 to 7, featuring a tour of the Bonsai Room. At 7, all of our guests can sample bites from some of our favorite chefs. Head to heritageradionetwork.org/gala for tickets.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey guys, it's Tuesday, November 27th, 2018. We're in the ninth year of the show, and I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host here. We got some special guests on today. One of my favorite guests, Yeppe from Evil Twin Brewing, is joining us today, man.
Why, thank you.
And you know what's so cool? People are waiting for you to guys open the Evil Twin Brewing in Ridgewood, Queens, but I was looking last night at all the shows you've been on with me, man. It's like at least five or six shows over the years.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were talking about a couple that you liked. I think we had one where Wicked Weed called in.
That's from many, many years ago.
And we didn't even know who they were then, did we?
Nope.
Yeah.
And we've been talking about the brewery in Queens the last three or four times, I think. So let's make this the last time we talk about before we open.
And you brought your... So in terms of opening up, you've got a great GM. Corey, introduce yourself.
My name's Corey Gargiulo. I'm general manager of Evil Twin Brewing NYC. Hopefully to be open soon.
Yeah, and great. And you know, I know you're a real pro. You've worked in... Tell us a couple of places.
Yeah,
you
so I have a background in hospitality with Union Square Hospitality Group, and had some stints in beer, more specifically with Beer Table, several years ago at the Grand Central store, and also at the Ginger Man.
But I know you're a real operations guy, a real pro. So yeah, I think Yeppe did good thing. And
yeah, I think so too.
Another special guest just picked him up yesterday. Matt, you're our famous Brewed in New York TV star.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I'm Matt Archambo. I'm the host of Brewed in New York on PBS, airing all over the state now. Yeah.
And thanks for coming out, man. You know, we met you years ago at Jimmy's Number 43, and you were talking about that show for a couple of years. So
Yeah, we've been working on it for a long time.
Really proud of you. So, hey, man, cheers. Welcome to the show, everybody.
Cheers, guys.
So we're just right after Thanksgiving here in New York, right? Roberta's Pizza. So, yeah, but let's talk about the brewery. So I know that you've done a lot of beers over the years. Everything from the Imperial Biscottis. We were talking about your cowboy smoke pills a little earlier. What are you looking forward to about having your own brewery in New York City? You know, types of beers you're going to make, the potential for that.
I'm looking forward to all of it, actually. Since it's been coming for so long, we've been building for about 2.5 years. So we signed a lease 2.5 years ago. We've definitely had some time to prepare for what we want to do, so we should be very prepared when we actually start brewing, which hopefully should start sometimes next week, the test batches, which is pretty crazy to think about after 2.5 years. But the whole plan about the brewery in New York is to, you know, treat it more like a brew pub, where we plan to sell pretty much all of it out of the brewery. We're going to have a very big tap room. We're going to have actually two different bars. So we just want to, you know, do a bunch of small one-off batches and sell them and do all the... I mean, I like to say that at this place I can do all the stuff that I haven't been able to do before. Meaning, you know, the batches are small and we don't have to distribute them. So that opens up for a whole new world for us, because distribution has its limits in terms of what kind of beers you can make and what you can add and all that stuff, because, you know, some of those ingredients just don't have a long shelf life, and we don't have to consider that anymore because, you know, we're going to sell it all directly to the consumer.
So you can do session beers,
all
whatever
of it,
you want.
Know, all of it. So yeah, it's very exciting finally too. We have the first couple of beers planned out, but other than that, we're just going to run with it and see how it goes.
Great. So Corey, how did you get involved with Yeppe? I know you worked at Union Square Hospitality, you worked at Marta.
Yeah, Violina. I was at, most recently the beer director at Marta. So obviously familiar with Evil Twin beers on both a personal and working level. Always was a big fan of Terrace in the beginning, was there on opening night. Yep, it probably doesn't remember, but probably met him once or twice back in the early days as, you know, he had to be ever present there and everybody, you know, knows who he is. You know, and then after being in hospitality for about 9 years with a focus on beverage and beer, it was pretty much like, I don't really want to be a part of this anymore. It's not really my vibe. And I was out looking for a job, and Yepa was looking for somebody to start helping with the project management of the build out. And we met a couple times in January and February. And
yeah, it was actually kind of a coincidence. Somebody that I've worked with before all of a sudden mentioned Corey as a guy who was looking, you know, for a job and who he knew and who he liked a lot. And I was like, yeah, all right, sounds interesting. And then 2 days later, another guy mentioned Corey. I don't know if it was a setup, but it definitely worked. So, you know, when two people come to me within a week and recommend the same guy that I didn't know about, you know, you gotta at least talk to the guy. So that's kind of how it came along. And we had a talk and we had another talk and the match was good. So that was back in April, I think, or March.
We started officially in April. Yeah. So a couple conversations between January and March.
Yeah.
And do you guys felt like you were kind of an equal playing field because you're kind of opening something new? I mean, it's your first brewery, Yepa.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about it is, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. Evil Twin is from 2010. So, you know, a lot of people think that I know everything because I've already done it. But as a matter of fact, I haven't already done it. I haven't built a brewery before. I haven't hired people the way we hire people now. And I haven't set it up in the way, you know, it's kind of a, you know, pretty good size setup we have to do. And we have to hire a bunch of people. And I haven't done that before, and which was one of the reasons why we decided to hire Corey back in April, because I could see that we were going into some work that I wasn't familiar with and that I needed some help with, because, you know, I can't pretend that I know everything. And Corey, you know, the fact that Corey came from the restaurant world was a big plus, because, you know, hospitality is going to be important for us, not in terms of food, but in terms of how we serve the beer and how we present the tap room and how we invite people in. And I wanted somebody who was familiar with that side of the world. You know, he was under the Danny Meyer group, and Danny Meyer is very known for hospitality. You know, he started 11 Madison and all that. So that was important to have somebody. I mean, you can always go out and find a beer nerd, but that doesn't necessarily mean that beer nerd knows about hospitality and know about building up a business. So, you know, that's why we decided on Corey.
Corey, what were some of the first tasks you had to take on when you joined?
Actually, the first project that I was given was to figure out how we're going to build this tap room in the courtyard. Figuring out, we talked about building a greenhouse out there and the process there. And that was actually my first project. But beyond that, it just really started as a lot of tasks that would come onto Yepa's plate that he didn't have the answer to, or he just didn't have the time, because, you know, the Evil Twin brand is still rocking and rolling as we're trying to do this build out. So it's been, you know, a lot of just kind of working and learning as you go for a lot of different tasks, even for me. So, I mean, having opened two restaurants with Union Square Hospitality Group, once as an hourly employee and then another time as a full-time salary manager, kind of gave me enough experience in kind of the ebb and flow of how openings operate and what to expect, and to kind of understand that timelines and deadlines are going to be variable, even though you don't necessarily want them to be. And, you know, it's just kind of been, as things come along, just figure out how to get it done.
That's cool. I saw some photos on your Instagram. So Evil Twin Brewing NYC Instagram is really cool. There was a photo of the tanks being delivered. And so what was it, an old banquet hall in Queens?
Yeah, it was. When we took it over 2.5 years ago, it was an old banquet hall with all that comes with that, disco balls and smoke machines. And
come on.
Fake,
yeah, for real, right?
fake curtains and all kinds of stuff. It was kind of cool, actually. Obviously, unfortunately, we had to rip it all out. But yeah, it was. I mean, there's many reasons why this has taken so long. You know, first of all, New York City is a beast to do anything in, and doing a brewery, which is a factory, is even worse. You know, I've built a bar and a restaurant before, which, looking back at it now, seems like a very easy thing to do compared to what we did this time. The the scale of what we're doing is pretty big for New York City. I mean, it's not a huge brewery, but it's pretty big for New York. This building is pretty big, and we have a big outdoor space. We have to, you know, co-mention it. We have to figure out. So with all that, you know, it's been a lot. I think it's gonna be, you know, it's gonna be very cool. It's gonna be very different from what you have seen before, for sure. The biggest energy we have put into this is figuring out how we can do something that really hasn't been done before, because there's so many breweries now, not only in New York but all over the country, and you know, there's so many tap rooms, and I always felt that all these tap rooms kind of look the same, and
they do
the
look
same
the same feeling, don't they?
And different versions of the same thing.
And I think it's important when you build a brewery in 2018, you have to consider that and consider, hey, what experience can we give our customers that, you know, that can tell them to go to our place instead of somebody else's place. And you know, the beers in New York are good. Every brewery in New York pretty much make awesome beers, so you know, that is, I think we can make beer as good, but it's hard to make it way better than everybody else. So I think we have to really consider how we can make the experience of the tap room, I don't want to say better, but definitely different than everybody else. And I think we've come up with some very cool solutions to that.
So, you know, what are some aspects of it? Design? Will there be food? You know, are there any interesting, you know, glasswares? You know, you kind of pioneered that funky.
There's a lot of aspects to it. I mean, we talk about this hours every day. Corey mentioned the tap room is actually going to be a big greenhouse, and it's hard to explain exactly what that means, but when you see it, you'll know what it means, and it's definitely going to be one of a kind. I've only seen one other bar that was a greenhouse. It's actually a, you know, year-round greenhouse where the bar is inside and everything. It's air-conditioned and heated, so you sit inside of a greenhouse and drink the beer. Might sound a little weird, but it's actually extremely cool when it's up and running.
Sounds cool, doesn't it, Matt?
Yeah. So the tap room itself, the public area, is in the greenhouse.
It's a big, wow, big greenhouse. Yeah, and then we're gonna have a big outdoor space, kind of like a beer garden outside. So we have a big outdoor space where we're building the greenhouse, and then we have the outdoor seating next to the greenhouse, and you can open the greenhouse up in the summer. So it's kind of like one flow in and out kind of thing.
That's fantastic.
It's actually very cool. I can't wait to show people, because I've been talking about this damn greenhouse for a year now, and every time I talk about it, people are like, what exactly do you mean? And you have to explain it, but without actually seeing it, it's kind of difficult to envision. But I was just in Los Angeles last week, and that's where we got the idea at a bar out there, and I just went back to that bar to shoot some more pictures, and it was just, I just looked at it and was like, this is the best idea ever. Besides that, we're actually doing another bar also. We're doing a small, like smaller taproom/cocktail bar, because now you can get a full on-premise liquor license, so you can do alcohol also for your taproom. So we're going to do like a speakeasy kind of secret invite-only kind of cocktail bar also in the back.
And, you know, your book that Where to Drink Beer came out, and I haven't had you on since that came out. I wanted to ask you about that. You were checking out places you wanted to, you liked in New York. Someone's waving to us. What's up, buddy? Who is that?
That's Don No. He works for 12%, who's our distributor. He moved from Texas, a good friend of mine also. So,
cool. More people coming in. I love that.
Yeah.
But so in the book, Where to Drink Beer, I know a couple of people asked you in interviews, you know, what's your favorite city? And I know you mentioned a couple, Chicago in New York, but you also did point out cocktail bars as well as beer bars.
Yeah, you know, Aviary, for example, in Chicago, which is considered one of the most high-end cocktail bars in the world. And, you know, the beer, so the book is called Where to Drink Beer. It's not about the best beer bars in the world. It's about where you can get the best beer experiences. I think we have a couple of thousand listings in the book, so it's like, it's very spread out. You know, there's even a brew pub in North Korea, which is kind of cool. So yeah, I named Aviary because, you know, Aviary actually have a very good beer selection, and I've worked with them for many years, and I've actually made a bunch of beers for them. So I know that they are very into beer, and it's something that they take very seriously. And we wanted to, didn't want to just name beer bars, because who wants to read a book with 2,000 beer bars? You know, you want to, if you travel to a different country or different city, you want to seek out the places where you get a unique experience. If it's the place in Hanoi, Vietnam, where you can only drink one beer, but you sit at the street and drink it out of a little plastic glass for 20 cents, that's another good experience. So we put that in also. So yeah, I mean, the book just came out a couple of months ago, and it's out worldwide. And you know, I know it's the biggest index book of beer places in the world, for sure, and it covers the whole world, which is kind of cool.
No, it's pretty impressive. And I noticed that, you know, your career as a gypsy brewer, I mean, you definitely got a chance to brew at a lot of places. I know you picked out Charleston, South Carolina as another great beer town.
Yeah, I mean, that was what, I mean, the reason why they asked me to make this book, there was two reasons. I had already worked with Fidon, who put it out when we did the food and beer book. But also because I have a lot of connections in the beer world from my gypsy brewing and from my traveling around the world. I brewed in more than 20 different countries, from Japan to Australia to Iceland to Norway to all kinds of places. And you know, they needed somebody who had the connection, to different people. I mean, I didn't put all the 2,000 places in. There's no way in hell anybody can go to 2,000 places, even in a lifetime. So the way we did it was we contacted, say, my contact in Japan and asked him for 20 experts in Japan who could help us name the places. So this book is not about me naming all my favorite places. This is a book about all the so-called beer experts all over the world naming their favorite places. So
that's pretty great. I remember you sent out the I was on the list.
Oh, cool.
It was quite an extensive survey, and I remember going through it on my phone. I got about halfway through, and then I said, I'll do this later, and I never did it. So I had to tell you that. I screwed
up.
But
you know what? That's all good. We actually ended up, I think the goal in the beginning was 1,000 places. We actually ended up with more than 3,000, so we actually had to pull a bunch of them out because Fidon freaked out a little bit about how many we actually had, which is obviously a good thing. So yeah, don't feel bad about it, Jimmy.
Cool. And quick, the first beer we had, it's this can. What was that?
This is a collaboration we did with Burial in North Carolina a couple of weeks ago. About a month ago. It's called This Is Bob. Long story, I met the owner's dad at a bar, and for some reason he called me Bob. So This Is Bob. I'm on the label. This is, you know, a very classic double IPA. We actually made it partly for a beer festival they're doing called, something Harvest, but everybody has to present a harvest beer, meaning you have to present a beer that has a harvest ingredient or an autumn ingredient. And I was like, since we're doing collaboration anyway, why don't we make the collaboration, take off a couple of kegs and add something to it. So we added grapes to the cakes that we served at the festival. So that's what it's made for.
Wow, it tastes great. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in another minute on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. The holidays are just around the corner, and at Beer Sessions Radio, we don't just care about what's in your glass. There's one smart kitchen appliance that can make the best Thanksgiving turkey you've ever tasted, for real. Joule Sous Vide uses precise temperature control and trademarked visual doneness guides to make perfect food every time. Cook incredible dishes at home via the Joule app on your phone or tablet. Or try voice-controlled cooking with the Joule Amazon Alexa skill. Hey Alexa, dial me up a brisket. There's zero guesswork, so steak, chicken, seafood, turkey, roasts, eggs, all come out exactly the way you like them. Just be sure to save room for pumpkin pie. Joule, perfect food every time. To get yours, visit chefsteps.com/joule and enter our code HRN to get $15 off for a limited time. That's chefsteps.com/joule and enter our code HRN. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. And check us out, heritageradionetwork.org. Next Monday, if you're in the New York City area, December 3rd, it's our annual gala at the Brooklyn Botanical Garden. It's going to be pretty special. Most of the hosts have some chef contacts, food contacts, spirit contacts, making some cool things for that festival. So here we are with Yepy and his team talking about opening the Evil Twin Brewing in Ridgewood, Queens. And our buddy Matt Archambault from Brewed in New York TV got to come by and hang out with us. So we're talking about what you're doing and your gypsy travels. We just tasted a second beer. What was that, Corey?
Yeah, so we just opened up Root and Branch Dead Man on Holiday. Thought this was going to be a fun one to bring along because their brewer, Anthony, who actually was previously a bartender, Torst, it's his brand. Anthony is helping us out with a lot of the logistics of organizing the brewing side of things, and will be with us until he has to separate to focus on the build-out of his brewery. Pretty strong.
That's actually huge news. Because yeah. Anthony, what he's been doing at Root and Branch has been pretty hot.
Yeah. So we, yeah, we, he, you know, he's about to build his own brewery out in Long Island, and knowing how long that would take, he obviously needed a job, and we like the guy, and I've been working with him before. He's been brewing the 12% beer project also that I've been brewing beers under. So, you know, we needed a brewer, and he needed a job, and we like each other, so it made a lot of sense. So he's been with us for a couple of months already, helping setting up the brew house and ordering all the little things and all the ingredients and all that stuff. So he's going to be on the team when we start next week.
Wow. So if we go through the family tree of Yeppe, I mean, you've got guys that work with you at Torse, like Anthony, who are now brewing, people you collaborated with around the country. I mean, who do you think is going to come into town and be making beers with you there? I'm sure you're going to do a lot of collaborations.
I mean, it's actually funny because some people are fighting to be the first. You know, I've been doing this for a long time, and I've collaborated with a lot of people and a lot of very good breweries out there. And everybody seemed very excited to actually come back to my house and kind of pay me back to what I've helped them with, you know. I have a whole line of people that want to come in, and people are emailing me every month saying, when can we come make a beer? You know, Omnipolio is coming to town next week, and they really wanted to brew with us, but unfortunately weren't quite ready, so we had to postpone that a little bit. Otherwise, they would probably have been number one, but they have to wait a little bit. Corey, but it's a good position to be in, and all the cool guys want to come brew with you.
That's going to be the highlight of the season, I think. But Corey, is that going to be one of your jobs, kind of managing who's coming and going? And
you know, so I think as far system? As who's coming and going, that'll be on Yepa's plate. We definitely, as a team, want to focus on making these collaborations and these visits something a little bit more different than just an Instagram photo op of people hanging out. The opportunity for us in such a large courtyard space is to, you know, hopefully turn a collaboration into an event, something where our guests can potentially have a little bit more connection with it than, you know, just seeing something on, you know, posted online, knowing a collaboration is going to happen and then, you know, waiting the 3 weeks to actually see the beer. So we're not really sure what that means yet and how we execute that on a taproom level, but I think it's important for us, and you know, we talked about how do we offer a very different taproom experience. I think this is one way that we can approach that on the beer side.
Tell them about the collaboration car.
1977 Chevy Nova.
Yes.
Outfitted with a drag engine that Yeppe bought off the street when he was dining at St. Anselm. That'll be our, hey, we're going to take you guys to lunch.
It's a beast of a car, and in a weak moment I had a little wine and a little food and was in a good company, and I saw this car in the street and I ended up buying it while I was eating dinner. But see, it's a very cool.
That's my ride home tonight. You come to Roberto's.
Unfortunately,
pizza.
It's not here, but it should be. But it's a very cool car, and it's, you know, we call it a collaboration car. We want to kind of give people this experience. It wasn't a very expensive car, but it's a very cool car. And to be able to, you know, have people come to New York, which is already a very attractive place to go to, and to be able to give them a ride around Brooklyn or Queens in a drag racer would be kind of fun. So that's the plan.
That's going to be fun. You know, and Matt Archambault, Brew New York TV show, congratulations. But, you know, you're a working bartender. I mean, yeah. You know, you work right now at Fool's Gold in the East Village. I bet you got some questions for Yep. I know you loved his the Cowboy Pills, that smoke lager beer.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, there's not a lot of, like, beers I don't like. People ask me what style I like, and there's no real style I don't like. But I have trouble with smoked beers sometimes. But that Cowboy Pilsner, I just loved picking that up.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, we stopped making it a couple of years ago, unfortunately. When we started making it 5 years ago, it sold really well and it was very popular. And we also made a smoked porter called Ashtray Heart, which was very popular. Unfortunately, the beer hype or the beer scene changed all the time, and all of a sudden smoked beers went out of fashion. And since we were doing these beers at Two Roads in 100-barrel batches, it was simply just too much to do at the time, so we couldn't sell it. So we had to discontinue it, but it's definitely something now that I have my own place and a smaller brew house that we can bring it back. That's definitely the plan. I mean, that's definitely one of the first beers I'm going to make. It's going to be a smoked lager. That's no doubt about it.
Great. That's what's going to be exciting, and I'm glad you brought that up. There's so many beers in your portfolio. I mean, there's those Imperial Biscotti beers, you know, there's the smoke pills that we talked about. You know, there are certain styles that you want to, you're going to do that you couldn't do before. You know, are you going to do anything? You're going to grow anything in the greenhouse, fresh ingredients, for example?
We're not going to grow it. The greenhouse is not going to work as a functional greenhouse, but we're going to go chilies on the roof. Both Corey and I are pretty obsessed with chilies. But yeah, there's definitely styles that I haven't been able to do before that I want to do. But there's also, which is maybe even more important, a lot of styles that I have done in my early days that I had to discontinue because of, you know, sales or whatever, that I can bring back now. Say the cowboy ashtray heart. I used to make even, you know, a Belgian double, which, you know, nobody wants to buy anymore, but, you know, if we do it in a 15 barrel batch and we make it really good, we could sell it at the tap room. So stuff like that is stuff that I'm excited to bring back, because that's how I started out. You know, the thing about it is Evil Twin is for only from 2010, but in the beer world that seems very old. You know, people kind of consider us as kind of old school, and the beers that I did back in 2010, you know, they're very different from what we do today. Nobody knew about hazy IPAs and all that stuff. And, you know, I'm kind of eager to bring those styles back. And I actually think we can bring them back. I think, you know, what I drink at home now is pretty much only Belgian triples and stuff like that, you know, nobody really cares about. But they taste really awesome. So, you know, why not?
That's exciting, man.
It's pretty amazing that... You know, the market for distributed beer is, everyone's going towards the same kinds of styles, but all of a sudden you're serving something that's not like a popular style in a tap room, and people will go for it, you know? All of a sudden a triple or a double looks way more appealing.
Well, it's also like, you know, I'm yuppie. It's like when you're in your own place, you know, you're going to start with that pills or IPA, but then as you're drinking through the night, I want to go to the Belgian triple. I want to finish with the Belgian quad, even, you know.
Yeah, and I also think since it's in a tap room and we have educated servers and it's brewed at the space, you can also more tell people what to drink. It's hard to tell people to go to Walmart and buy a triple, you know, when there's all these IPAs that people rather buy. But if they sit at a tap room and drink five different beers, and you tell them, hey, we just made this triple, it's actually kind of cool. We know it might not be the hottest style, but you should check it out. And I even think a lot of beer drinkers these days, like a lot of new beer drinkers, never tasted a triple. I really think they didn't, you know. A lot of people grew up in IPAs and pastry stouts and all that stuff. And to present a triple to them might be a little, you know, intimidating at first, but I actually think we could convince some people that this is actually a very tasty beer.
No, and I think you need that, you know, especially if you're drinking a lot. Kind of in the night, you want to hit your stride, and that Belgian triple, to me, that's my Friday night beer, man.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. I mean, I'm drinking Arkel Blonde at home all the time. I love it.
And then I have a question. We have a great listener, J.M. Hammond. He's on Instagram, at Octobird. His question, it's you might have answered it before on the show, but he wanted to know, are you going to be brewing any beers with Danishes in it? So tell us a little about that story of putting in donuts or Danishes into a beer.
I mean, everything is obviously possible when you ask me, and I, you know, yeah, people can see that as a gimmick, which is understandable, you know, putting fried chicken in a beer. Actually, we didn't take ourselves very seriously when we did that, but all of a sudden a lot of people took very seriously. We're not planning to brew with Danishes, but, you know, I'm not gonna say no, because if it makes sense, we'll do it. I've done it before, you know. The Imperial Donut Break is a very known beer of ours, and when we did that years and years ago, nobody really made beers with donuts, and I just tried it out and made a lot of sense. So if it makes sense to put Danishes in it, I'll definitely do it again.
Corey, are there any beers from Evil Twin that you want to give a shout out to? I know you just poured another beer for us.
Yeah, so Yep can speak to this one a little bit more, a little collaboration vanilla cola stout that he did with Decadent Ales. But I mean, I'm really excited at the prospect of seeing what we can do with a stout program. I know Yep is partial to brewing beers like this and having even more Jesus and seeing what kind of, you know, we have a completely separate temperature controlled barrel room that will be barrel aging beers. And so, I mean, world's kind of our oyster as far as that's concerned, and, you know, how we can think about beers and then, you know, just brewing them and selling them. But then what can we do on the barrel aging side of things to add different flavors? And, you know, I think the Harlan's Even More Jesus is probably one of the best stouts I've ever had.
Thank you.
And so having
that's how he got the job,
right?
I
think the prospect of being able to really focus on different flavors, and, you know, like I said, we're able to do small batches, and if we can, you know, if we feel comfortable with a beer style and flavor profiles, and we think we can execute it, we're going to. And then hopefully at the end of the day, the product will, you know, speak for the passion and effort put behind it.
Yeah, stouts is definitely something we're going to do a lot, obviously, since it's what has built Evil Twin pretty much, Imperial Biscotterbake and even more Jesus and beers like that. And as Corey mentioned, we have a dedicated barrel aging room, which is very cool. It's pretty big and it's going to be temperature controlled. And to have that in New York City is kind of unique. Not a lot of breweries have that because the space is not there. But it's so important for us to be able to do these barrel aged out well. And I have access to some very, very good barrels, the best barrels in the world pretty much. So, you know, we definitely want to take advantage of that so we can do some cool stuff and make sure that they come out perfectly.
That's great. And let's talk about Queens. So, you really, where you are, I mean, we're in Bushwick. We're right on the edge of Queens, and only a couple subway stops away is where you guys are in Ridgewood. What stop is it at? It's on the L train.
Palti L stop.
So that's only like two or three more stops from Roberta's Pizza.
We are 50 feet from the Brooklyn border or something like that. We
yeah.
Like the first.
So you're Bushwick East.
We're like just north of Wyckoff on George Street, and if we were on the opposite side of Wyckoff, we'd be in Bushwick, technically.
Yeah, it's actually funny you mentioned it because I'm from Denmark, and we get a lot of attention in Denmark and a lot of, you know, media attention. And every time I talk to a journalist in Denmark, I've always said Brooklyn because everybody in Denmark knows what Brooklyn is. Nobody knows what Queens is, so it's just easier for us to say, hey, we're opening a brewery in Brooklyn, because then people would understand. If you say Queens, you have to kind of start explaining where that is. Now that we're getting close to the opening, I've kind of switched that into saying Queens. Plus, Queens is actually getting more and more known also over in Europe. So, but yeah, it's kind of funny that, you know, I've just been saying Brooklyn because that was easier. It's so close to Brooklyn.
There's so many really great breweries in Queens. I mean, Matt, you've worked at Single Cut.
Yep.
Single Cut. And now Fifth Hammer in Long Island City, which is also a destination for collaborations and other things. And you're working at Fifth Hammer, right?
Yeah. I've been working there for a little while now. Pretty cool spot. It's fun. They always try to keep like 10 different styles on tap at a time. And it's pretty amazing to see the differences in how people order at a brewery as opposed to a bar. In a bar, people are kind of going towards the same styles. Mm-hmm. And so the buyer is a little limited in what they can bring in because they have to go towards those popular styles. But in the brewery, people are
like
ordering
four lines of
crazy
IPAs, right?
Different beers and saisons. I mean, I was very surprised to see how different the purchasing patterns were.
Yeah, that's actually interesting because, yeah, and it's obviously because when you go to a brewery, you want to experience a brewery. You don't want to just drink the beer. But when you go to a bar, you just want to drink what you like the mm-hmm. most, which is always an IPA for most people, right? So
I also think that Fifth Hammer is probably experiencing something that I expect you're going to experience, because it sounds like your place is going to be so big, and I have a feeling it's going to be really popular. And I think you're going to have a ton of people in there going in there for a bar experience who aren't, you know, beer nerds or anything, and they're going to be getting different styles that, you know, you're going to get runs on kegs you wouldn't have expected, I'm sure.
Yeah, and now that you mentioned it, that's something we talk about a lot because, you know, we are opening a brewery with a very known brand, so we have an advantage in many yep. ways to everybody else who's opening breweries these days. But also, obviously, that's also... It's also a little intimidating to open with such a known brand because we have to do it right. If we screw it up the first time people come in, they're never going to come back. But we've been talking a lot about the clientele that we want to, not that we want to get in, but that we, you know, that we have to attract to get in, because we know we're getting the beer nerds, we know we're getting the Danish tourists. Mm-hmm. So what are we missing out of that? And we're pretty much missing, the more normal people, the people that just come in and drink the beer because they like the beer and don't drink the beer because of the name. And take a place like Other Half, I think a lot of the people that drink at their tap room comes because of the brand name. And, you know, they'll drink whatever that says Other Half on it because Other Half is just a known brand and mm-hmm. they're known for all those IPAs. But we also want the people in that just come in because, hey, it's a cool space, the beer tastes good, it's a good vibe and all that stuff, that don't care if it's Evil Twin or if it's somebody else who made it, as long as the beer is good enough. And that's something we definitely we're working to figure that part out. And, you know, we already started working with the local community to bring those people in, because, you know, at the end of the day, the beer nerds are going to come in until you're not hot anymore, and then they're going to move on to the next thing. So building your whole business around that, I mean, it's already too late for me because I'm already 8 years old, so, you know, I can't do that anymore. And I don't really want to do that. We want to create an environment where normal people feel comfortable coming in. It's not just nerds sitting there. We try to do the same with Tusk when we opened that, and we had long conversation about how do we avoid all these nerds coming in. And it actually ended up being pretty much only nerds coming in, and I think it scared away a lot of people. I think it's changed now, but mm-hmm. in the beginning we were like, how the hell do we avoid this?
Wow, man. Yeah. This is cool. Hold on, Corey. Just hold that thought. We're going to take another short break. We'll be back in 1 minute on Beer Sessions Radio. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni, the host, and got a great show. We're previewing the Evil Twin Brewing Company. It's going to be opening soon in Ridgewood, Queens, which is just across the board. To me, it's Bushwick East. And Yeppe, we were just talking about some of the plans you have. And Corey, I cut you off right before the break.
I think the kind of just to wrap up what Yeppe was saying is like the idea and plan for us in order to be not just a successful tap room, but really to be a successful business in the neighborhood, is we really need it to be a community space above all else. And how important it is for us to kind of reach beyond just the beer people that are going to come out no matter what, and understanding like they're not always going to be there necessarily. And how do we make it a space through having the full liquor license, and what other offerings can we have, having a diverse enough beer list so that the people that are into beer can have kind of a rounded experience in that regard. So,
and you're a really solid hospitality background. So you actually tell us the school that you went to, because I don't think there's too many people in our industry that have like a solid, like, you know, hospitality training.
Yeah. So I went to Michigan State University, the School of Hospitality Business. So one of the top ranked hospitality businesses, out there. I mean, doesn't really match to Cornell University, but they're kind of in a league of their own in that regard. But I mean, just to take it, give you a brief overview, it's essentially a business focused program in this hospitality segment. So it's not necessarily service experience aside from internships.
It's not like a culinary school.
Right. It's not like that at all. It's really just a business program that focuses on hotels, restaurants, cruise, casino, things like that. So you get a well-rounded background that you can kind of inject yourself in any facet of hospitality.
That's pretty cool. I mean, it speaks to the operation you guys are putting together, doesn't it, Matt? I mean,
yeah, absolutely. And I can tell you're thinking about your place in a pretty cool way. I'm excited to check it out.
Yeah. If I get there and there's any pint glasses, will I be expecting pint glasses, or am I going to get some special tasting glasses?
Pint glasses. So we're definitely not going to do stems. And it's not because I don't like stems. Obviously, we did stems or doing stems at Trust and kind of made stems famous there. I don't know if you can say that, but I kind of want to try and do something that is not a trust. You know, we're definitely also going to do very different, you know, design and very different setup. I don't like repeats. I like to renew myself, and I like to, you know, change things up. And this is a brewery with a tap room, and it's not a fancy bar as such. And we also, you know, we don't want to show it as a fancy bar. We're definitely going to do pint glasses and half pints or whatnot. And again, it has to do with the community, and has to do with where we are. We're in Ridgewood, and if we serve everything out of fancy wine glasses, I think we'll scare some people away, and we definitely don't want to do that.
Yeah. And are you guys going to have any food, you know, after you get open?
We are going to have food. We're not going to do food ourselves. I already had one restaurant, and I'm not going to do that again. But we are going to have food trucks. We were going to do Fede Sour, but unfortunately they pulled out recently, so we have to figure something else out. But we have some cool plans. We'll figure it out. There's so much up in the air right now, and it's hard to say exactly where it's going to land, but we'll figure it out.
I'm so psyched for you guys. And your buddy's here. This guy was just outside the window. So we're here at Roberta's Pizza. If you ever come in the back, there's our studio. But your buddy, he works at 12%. Just, you want to introduce him?
I mean, this is my friend Dano, who moved from Texas to New York about half a year ago. No, not even that, 4 months ago or something like that, to work for 12%. Don and I have known each other for a while. He worked for our distributor down in Texas when we were in Texas. And every time I went to Texas, he always gave us a good time and showed us around, and even took me out to a farm to shoot big guns and everything. You know, the stuff they do down in Texas.
Just say hi so we can hear your voice. And let's say hey.
Hey.
So, dude, anyways, thanks. He just brought us cocktails from the bar at Roberta's. What's this cocktail?
It's, I don't know, there's some chili in it for sure. It's spicy. What did you say, tequila based? It's definitely up my alley. I like it a lot.
It's a spicy tequila cocktail.
Yeah. I like it. So that's maybe a preview of going to your tasting room. Maybe I'll go in the cocktail bar there too.
Yeah, so we're also going to do cocktails. And we actually also going to do coffee. So we, you know, since we have a greenhouse and it's going to be attractive to sit in the morning also. And since we're right by the L line, by the Holsey stop, we're also going to open a coffee shop and do fancy coffees. We're talking to Say Coffee, which is right around the corner from here, which is an awesome place. They roast their own coffee and they're very good at it. So yeah, we're going to bring those guys in and do some work with them. We want to make it a whole experience so people can kind of hang out all day long.
Well, you know, I think you're going to help spread the word about Queen's Beer too, because you're doing something special. You know, I think there's more breweries in Queens than Brooklyn. I'm not sure exactly.
I think it's like 13 in Queens and 16 in Brooklyn. It's just slightly under. But
and Single Cut was one of the first. You know, our buddies at Bridge and Tunnel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're right around Ridgewood, the corner from us, actually.
Finback, but Fifth Hammer. So, Matt, you're working there now. Yep. You poured us a Fifth Hammer. And I love, cheers to Chris and Mary. I love those guys dearly. I haven't had a chance to get out there yet.
Oh, you got to come and visit. Come on some Friday. I'll be working.
So what did you pour us?
So this is the Autumn Rye. It's a rye pale ale. It's like not a crazy hoppy on the finish, just really easy drinking. We're actually pouring it at Fool's Gold right now, too. Something that the Pilsner drinkers who come in, that's the only thing that they're going to go for. We can give them some other easy drinking stuff.
Yeah.
And also just because the TV show's about New York State beer, we use a New York State-grown rye in this. Fifth Hammer is a farm brewery, so a lot of New York State-grown ingredients.
And how's the rollout of the show going? I know about over 2 years ago you guys started working on it.
Yeah.
Shooting an only New York State beer TV show.
Yeah. It's been airing upstate. There's like 8 or 9 PBS channels in the state, so it's been airing upstate since the summer. But it just started airing on Sunday in the city, and it's about to start in Long Island, too. So here in the city, it's Sunday nights at 7:30 p.m. on PBS 13. 13 episodes, each one's in a different region of the state. So we talk to mostly brewery owners, but then some bar owners. We talk to a barrel cooperage. That was a really cool segment. A craft maltster let me jump into a kiln and do some shoveling. It's pretty amazing to take a tour like that around the state and meet people who are opening brew pubs like right on the border with Canada, and then going to a giant space like Southern Tier and getting like the full tour of that system. So pretty big range.
Cool. Wow, man.
Yeah.
Do we have time for questions?
Yeah, go for it.
So you guys are in Long Island City, right?
Fifth Hammer, yeah.
Yeah, Fifth Hammer, yeah. Yep. So how excited are you about Amazon opening out there? Because I read about it the other day and I actually looked into where they're located and what breweries were close by, because I read that they could hire up to 40,000 people with an average wage of $150,000
a year. Oh my gosh.
That's going to be some heavy buying power for you guys.
Yeah, well, so Fifth Hammer is, by my estimate, seems to be about 250 feet from the southeast corner of where that campus is going to be, assuming it all goes through.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a huge change in the neighborhood. You know, there's a lot of ups and downs, and there's a lot of reactions in Queens right now about the move. But ultimately, hopefully, it's going to mean a lot of good tax revenue. But in terms of just that little neighborhood, it's going to change the game there. And I think there's going to be some businesses that really flourish, and there's going to be some businesses who probably suffer.
I'm sure breweries would do very good. I mean,
they're going to do very well.
I can
well.
Imagine Amazon people need a beer after slaving all day long at the warehouse.
They have the drones come and pick up the beer. You know, crowlers to go. But on that note, you know, it can be a crapshoot too. You know, I think that for Chris and Mary, where they opened in Long Island City, apparently there's some new developments there. There's office workers as well as residents. So I heard that they're the only new brewery in New York City that is open 7 days a week because of the traffic. Like other breweries are a little out of the way. You know, you have to go to the end of the line. You have to travel there. But it seems like they got lucky with that location.
Yeah, there's so many high rises right on the water there in Long Island City. So the location is really great. And we get a lot of people who are coming to us just because we're a cool bar in Long Island City. I always consider it a win when someone comes in and they ask for a Jack and Coke, which, of course, we do not have. And I kind of talk them through what's available, and then I see them come in a few more times in the coming weeks. It means we kind of won, and they're getting... It's amazing that in this day and age, you know, I've been like following beer for so long that people... I'm introducing people to a brewery still, you know. There's still so many people for whom this is all so new.
Yeah, and that's a good thing about New York City. You know, I would say if somebody came to me and said, hey, I have a dream of opening a brewery outside of New York, I would probably say you should reconsider that because there's a lot of brewery out there. But in New York, what do we have, 30 breweries? 10 million people? You know, we're so way behind still, and there's room for so many more breweries out there.
I was reading about how San Diego just crossed the $1 billion mark for the annual revenue in craft breweries. There's like 150 breweries in San Diego County. So I did some dividing out just on my calculator, and I was like, all right, so they have way more breweries per capita than us.
You're a polymath, dude.
I know. But in terms of like square footage, you know, Queens and Brooklyn both just destroy them in breweries per square footage. But we just have so many people.
Yeah.
There's so much room.
Yeah.
There's so much.
Now, the book, Where to Drink Beer, there was an interview in, I think, Bloomberg News. She asked you about your favorite beer city. So tell us more about New York. So you said like 5 or 6 years ago, you didn't think New York was a great beer city?
No. I mean, when I moved here about 7 years ago, New York was not a great beer city at all. I mean, there was really only two breweries, Six Pint and Brooklyn, and there was only a couple of decent. Sweat and Duel was by far the best beer by the time. There was a couple of other good ones. That has definitely changed a lot. So when I was asked by Bloomberg to name, from the book, name the best beers in the world, obviously I had to think about that for a little bit because there's a lot of good beer cities. But when you consider everything in, and I'm not talking about the amount of breweries, but yeah, San Diego has 180 breweries. We have 30, so, you know, and people even brought that up when I mentioned New York. But if you consider the quality of what's being done in New York, say quality of the beers being brewed, I mean, I think all the breweries in New York pretty much are killing it right now. The quality of the beer bars, the quality of the restaurants that have a good beer selection, and the quality of the beers that are distributed or imported that are available, I don't think there's any city in the world that can match that. And I actually thought about it for a long time, and I didn't just throw it out there. I actually, you know, I can stand behind it. And even now, a month later, and I got a little shit from saying New York, and people are like, really? I mean, what about Denver, and what about this and that? I still think New York is the best because the quality is just so crazy good. There's nothing you can't get in New York.
Hey, Corey, do you feel that way?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, it's been interesting to see what's happened over the last 5 years, especially in the beer community as far as new breweries in the city, and places open up and they're high quality and more places open up, and you're not going to be successful unless you're at least matching the quality of some of these other places. So, I mean, the bar is set really high in general, just being New York City, because, you know, how can you survive if you're not really providing?
One last question for Yebby. So again, going back to the book and your travels and everything, is there a city or a place that's going to inspire in the back of your mind kind of how you run the new brewery, tap room, or part of the decor? I mean, is something like Bamberg in Germany, or is there some place that's really inspired you?
No. I mean, it would be obvious for me to say Copenhagen or Denmark or Scandinavia, because that's where I'm from, and that's definitely what we did with Trust. You know, Trust was very Scandinavian in its interior and everything. But when we built Trust, you know, that was our first place, and we worked with a designer, and obviously it was our idea, but they executed it for us. This time we're doing everything ourselves. We're doing all the designs down to the toilet paper holder and everything. So it's way more a personal design, and, you know, we're bringing in what we like and where we came from and what we use every day. So I don't want to reveal too much. We also want to keep a little bit for as a surprise for when we open. But it's going to be a very personal space, and it's definitely going to show who we are. And you know, that's kind of where we are right now. I mean, everything with Evil Twin is very personal. I mean, I call it Evil Twin for a reason. It's a very personal brand to me, and I definitely want to show that in the chat room and in the brewery also.
Well, I'm really looking forward to when you guys get open. I'm sure in 2019 we'll be out there. Matt, a last question for Yeppe or Corey?
Sure. What's the brew setup? How many fermenters?
For now, we have a 15-barrel system, three vessels. You know, pretty manual. I work at 100-barrel brew houses that are, you know, super technical, and you know, you can't really do that much. So I wanted to have a more manual system. We start out with 5 15-barrel and 4 30-barrel fermenters. We can expand that to another 4 15 and another 4 30. Hmm. So the start capacity is going to be 3,500 barrels. The max capacity is going to be about 7,000-8,000, and that's more than enough. I mean, I do about 20,000 barrels now, mm-hmm. and I have absolutely no desire to do more than that. So we're still going to do the contract brewing. You know, we're still going to continue that. So this is more just like an add-on. And if we in 2 years from now only brew 3,500 barrels out there, I'm more than happy. I don't need that big scale. I don't have a desire I have a desire to take over the world in terms of quality. I don't have a desire to take over the world in terms of quantity. Mm-hmm. And it's just how I am. And, you know, so yeah, it's a good setup. It's small enough so you can manage it.
Wow, man, that's a great way to end the show. So great having you on, Yuppie. I'm so proud of you. And
thank
Corey,
you.
Great meeting you.
Thank you for having me.
Matt, I'm glad you got to come on the show, man. Looking forward to watching Brewed in New York on PBS Channel 13.
Yeah, thanks, Jimmy.
So, guys, thanks so much. And a big shout-out to our producer, Justin Kennedy, who put the show together, engineer Matt Patterson, Dylan Hoyer, our intern, and I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks for joining us on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
All right.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.